This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, slavery gets the most attention when it comes to race in early America, but our guest historians say that the pre-Civil War North also saw lots of racial violence targeting black communities. First, it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Member Drive. Keely Boltina joins me. Listeners, that means you provide the largest source of funding here at Wisconsin Public Radio. This drive is your chance to support all the programs that you enjoy. So give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Rob, last hour of Central Time, we received 10 different gifts. We received 10 calls, 10 forms filled out on the website of people who say, hey, Central Time matters to me and I want to support it. Thank you so much if you're one of those 10. We are looking for more people to join in now. When you give, you fund Central Time and all the other WPR programs that you count on. So don't hesitate. Give now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Well, here's the thing. We ask you this because such a big part of the funding for Wisconsin Public Radio programs, literally the biggest piece, is listener support. So while all of our funding sources, the state and federal governments, the businesses, they're important, your contribution makes a huge difference. WPR is the amazing and varied service that it is thanks to your support. Keep independent, high-quality programs on the air when you give now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
This drive, you can get a pair of WPR pint cups. I have to say, they are very spiffy looking. The one has a design that goes from the yellows and the reds to the deep burgundies. Another has different shades of blue. They're stackable steel clean canteen cups. They're perfect for everyday use, or maybe you take them on one of the many outdoor adventures you find in Wisconsin. So you can support the programs that you value and show off your love for WPR. It starts with a gift of $20 a month or more, and you can give at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Here on WPR, you get fact-based news, high-quality entertainment, informative talk, and great music. You get a rich experience no matter when you tune in.
This depth and breadth is possible thanks to listener contributions. Make yours now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We don't expect any one or even any 100 listeners to carry all the costs of the program. In fact, there's a kind of a good side to having the bulk of funding for WPR programs spread out over thousands of donors.
Right. We have this wide base of support, and it just makes for a more stable organization. So join in. Become a member now. Maybe your gift is $100 for the year, or maybe you realize that you can contribute $10 a month. You decide the amount and the donation method that's best for you, and then the most important step, give. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
In addition to funding the programs, maybe getting those cool clean canteen mugs, your donation enters you into a drawing for a Wheel and Sprocket gift card. If you win, you get $1,000 to spend on bikes or cycling gear for your next outdoor adventure. Sustainers, if you already make ongoing monthly gifts, good news, you're already entered. If you're not a sustainer yet, sign up now. Enter this drawing and all future drawings at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Yeah, and if you're a sustainer, don't stop thinking about us now. Let's keep talking because you're already making ongoing monthly gifts, and we really appreciate that. It makes a huge difference. Make today the day that you add to your support of WPR. Maybe you think, I can do an extra $5 or $10 a month. Whatever amount you choose, you can donate now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Carly in Horicon says, I'm fortunate to have steady delivery work. With Central Time on the dial, this becomes learning time. It's the ultimate in multitasking. Fantastic. Glad we could be with you there on the job, Carly. And Daly in Horton says, there's never a dull moment on Central Time, especially not when we're helping Carly deliver stuff. Thank you both so much for giving. How about you? Make your gift. Help make it all happen at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. When we look back at the early days of the United States, before the Civil War, a lot of the focus on racial injustice is on the slave-owning states of the southern and central parts of the country. But our next guests say we tend to overlook another big part of the story, racial violence in the northern states, with mob attacks on black communities, often with the cooperation of political leaders. They say these violent attacks resemble the better-known Tulsa, Oklahoma massacre of 1921, and that we need to confront these stories for a better understanding of our history. Our guest wrote about how these riots were more common in the 19th century than we remember in a piece for the National Museum of American History's blog. It's titled Many Tulsa Massacres, How the Myth of a Liberal North Erases a Long History of White Violence. Christy Clark Pujara is an associate professor of history in the Department of Afro-American Studies at UW-Madison. She's the author of Dark Work, The Business of Slavery in Rhode Island. Her current project is Black on the Midwestern Frontier, From Slavery to Suffrage in the Wisconsin Territory, 1725 to 1868. Christy, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Annalisa Cox, historian of racism in 19th century America, currently a non-resident fellow at Harvard's Hutchins Center for African and African-American Research. She's the author of the book Bone and Sinew of the Land, America's Forgotten Black Pioneers and the Struggle for Equality. Annalisa, thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here.
Well, Christy, how common was this type of violence in the North in the early days of the United States before the Civil War?
It was incredibly common. By one historian's count, just in a few year period between 1834 and 1836, he counted something like 46 mob attacks against African Americans in the North. So this happened fairly regularly. When I was writing Dark Work, The Business of Slavery in Rhode Island, I came across two such attacks just in Providence in, you know, less than a 15 year period. So as Black people were transitioning out of slavery into freedom, a process they themselves were driving, they were attacked.
Annalisa, you share the story in the piece the two of you wrote about one of these attacks in Cincinnati. Can you give us tell us a little bit about this so we get a sense of the scope of what we're talking about here?
Right. So there were actually three massive racist attacks in Cincinnati between 1829 and 1841. And this involved literally people, very highly organized whites, being organized by newspaper editors and politicians for weeks, if not months, in advance of these attacks. So they're really well organized. And in 1841, they broke into the federal armory, took out guns and a cannon, and literally started shooting the cannon into this African-American neighborhood. So we're talking about the destruction of buildings, homes, churches, schools, and lives.
Christy, Annalisa mentioned the involvement of political leaders, of members of Congress and others. Sometimes when we think of mob violence, we think of spontaneous thing happening leaders come in and shut down. That was not the case here.
Absolutely not. These were, as historians say, gentlemen of property and standing. Right. So these are the social elite, the political elite and the economic elite. These are mill owners and lawyers and politicians and church leaders that are often the impetus for these attacks on these rising Black communities that are being attacked because they're successful, because Black people were giving lie to the myth that slavery was the proper place for them, that they could not and would not thrive in freedom. And as they did thrive and succeed in freedom, they were attacked for that success.
And Annalisa, the brutality of the messages here and the attacks themselves, you quote leaders literally calling on white people to castrate Black men and rape Black women. This is just unbelievable, but it happened.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. It did. And I think one of the really important things to remember is that when what we call the Great Migration occurred in the 20th century, African descended people were coming from the South into northern cities that were already segregated because of this violence that occurred before the Civil War. And if we erase this history of racist violence, we erase the people that it occurred against, right? This is about belonging. And for so long, there has been this really toxic myth in the Midwest and in the North that African Americans don't belong on those frontier and rural spaces, that they literally were not there before the Civil War or even in the 19th century. But not only were they were there in greater numbers and succeeding at a greater, like to a greater level than historians have acknowledged for years.
We're talking about mob violence against Black communities in the pre-Civil War Northern United States. Our guest historians say it's an overlooked, in some ways erased, but important part of American history. Christy Clark Pujara is Associate Professor of History in the Department of Afro-American Studies at UW-Madison. Annalisa Cox is an historian of racism in 19th century America. They stay with us coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with historians Christy Clark Pujara and Annalisa Cox. We're talking about a piece they wrote for the National Museum of American History, looking at mob violence against Black communities in northern states before the Civil War, out east and here in the Midwest. Christy, Annalisa was talking about this being erased from history in many ways. And, you know, I paid attention in school. I voluntarily read history a fair amount on my own time. The stories you're telling, I read about yesterday when I read your piece for the first time, for the most part. Why, how did this get erased?
I think your experience is really common. And this erasure is intentional. Anyone can search the databases of the 19th century newspapers now and have been able to do so for a couple of decades, thanks to technology. And any just basic search of Northern newspapers will fill out all of this information. This is not like information that was tucked away in some great grandmother's attic and nobody had access to. We have chosen, and when I say we, I'm talking about historians have chosen the stories that we tell. And for so long, we have told this really binary, simplistic story of a anti-slavery North and a pro-slavery South. And that has served to erase the tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of Black people that have been in the North since the 1620s. And we don't think about that. And even right here in Wisconsin, the history of Black people in this place that becomes Wisconsin is one that begins in the French territorial period in the 1720s. Yet we have no sense of that. When we think about the founding of Wisconsin, we don't think about the fact that our first territorial governor, Henry Dodge, brought 5 enslaved people with him to the territories in 1827. And they come 100 years after the first Black people are in the region. And so this history has been intentionally erased. And we tell a story that is much more in line with Little House on the Prairie than what actually happened in these spaces. And one really great thing about Annalisa's book, The Bone and the Sinew, something that I really appreciated as a historian, is that she reminds us that there was a state's worth, so 60,000 free Black people in the Midwest before the Civil War. And we know little to nothing about them outside of some of the incredible work that she's done.
Annalisa, I wanted to get into another piece of this story, the attacks we talked about against Black communities, the most dramatic part of the story, not the only part. In the piece the two of you wrote, you talk about things like voting and property and other restrictions on the lives of the Black people in the Midwest and the East that Christy was just talking about. Can you spell that out a little for us?
Right. So we often think of equal voting rights as something that came in the 20th century, but actually we went through an early equal rights and civil rights movement around the time of the American Revolution. So we're talking the late 1700s here in the United States, a revolutionary war that people of African descent took part in and fought in for the freedom of all people. They believed those words that all men are created equal with an equal right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And so the Northwest Territory that becomes the states of Ohio, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, and Wisconsin start off in 1787 with the right to vote for any man who owns 50 acres of land. And that included men of African descent. And when Wisconsin becomes a state, the white people in Wisconsin steal that right to vote from the propertied pioneers of African descent who are in Wisconsin already.
And Christy, I want to pick up a little more of the Wisconsin story. As we mentioned, you're working on a book from slavery to suffrage in the Wisconsin territory, the main title, Black on the Midwestern Frontier. What other stories are you coming across, if you can give us a little a teaser for the book you're working on?
Absolutely. So to get to some specifics that Annalisa just mentioned about voting, Wisconsin was supposed to become a state in 1846. The first constitution failed. It failed for a number of reasons, but one of those reasons was there was a referendum attached to that first constitution that said there had to be an immediate vote on whether or not Black men would have access to the ballot box. That was controversial and one of the reasons why Wisconsin doesn't become a state in 1846. In 1848, the constitution that was passed that was that helped create the state of Wisconsin was explicitly racist. If you read the suffrage article of the 1848 Constitution, it is crystal clear. In order to vote, you need to be white, you need to be male, you need to be 21. And whiteness is what was most important, not even citizenship. So if you were a foreign-born white male and you had lived in the state or a territory or the territory for a year, you could just declare an intention to become a citizen, and you had the right to vote. So the bar wasn't citizenship, the bar was whiteness. And then there's all of these other clauses that really restrict the vote for Native Americans, right? That there were some of them who could vote if they met a really high bar of already being a citizen of the United States. But what's important about that suffrage article, and I really encourage people to get a copy of the 1848 Constitution, you can read it online, the Wisconsin Historical Society has originals, right? Is how important whiteness was, because there wasn't like there was tens of thousands of Black people that were going to create some kind of voting block. There were actually very few Black people in the state, less than, we're talking about thousands of people. So if every last one of them had voted two or three times, they still wouldn't have constituted any kind of political voting block. But what's important was whiteness, because whiteness was seen as worthy settlement, as belonging, as what was necessary to contribute to the creation of that society.
In our last few moments, Annalisa, there's an ongoing debate coming up again in recent days over how to talk about one's own country's history. Are we celebrating the happier sides of heritage or paying attention to the worst moments? Can you talk about what we lose if we don't look at the bad stuff?
I want to be really clear here. I think that Christy would be in agreement with me here that I don't think of myself as looking at the quote unquote bad stuff. Mm-hmm. I think of myself as looking at the facts. We are just presenting the truth. I think something fundamental gets lost, both the sort of the painful and distressing aspects of America's past, as well as the good aspects. If we literally ignore the truth and ignore the facts of the past and ignore entire populations, if we erase people of African descent from the Wisconsin frontier and from Wisconsin's history, we are erasing basic facts about why Wisconsin is the way it is today and how it even became a state.
Annalisa, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome.
And Christy, thanks for being with us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
We've been talking to Christy Clark-Pujara, Associate Professor of History in the Department of Afro-American Studies at UW-Madison, and Annalisa Cox, Historian of Racism in 19th Century America. We've been talking about a piece they wrote for the American Museum, the National Museum of American History, on attitudes of race in the North before the Civil War. Now it's Wisconsin Public Radio's Fall Member Drive. Keely Baltina joins me now. Your support is an essential piece of the funding for Central Time and all the programs you enjoy on WPR. It is your time to take action. You make it all possible when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We are looking for 14 more people in the next about 35 minutes. We can do that. Your gift right now is so crucial because when you give, you support the programs you rely on every day.
Thank you so much if you've already given. If not, the time is now. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We just heard this conversation about racial injustice and how people in the United States in the North were organizing and sabotaging and even attacking people of color as black people were becoming successful after slavery. What incredible nuance here with this better understanding, intentional planning to make people of color look bad or not succeed. I mean, this kind of truth is what you get on Central Time, this ability to go beyond our offhand assumptions about what our own history as Americans looks like. These are necessary conversations, and they're the kind of conversations you can count on from Central Time.
WPR is listener supported. That means your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes the many topics you tune in for every day possible. Choose an amount that works for you, then make your gift.
You might have a monthly subscription for your cell phone or any one of those streaming services out there. Now we're asking you to support WPR like you pay for the other services you rely on.
The difference is that you decide how much to give. Support the programs that are part of your day. Become a WPR sustainer. Choose a monthly gift amount that works for you and then set up an ongoing installment, a subscription at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Let you know a little secret here. It's an election year, and you count. I know, it's crazy. You count on Wisconsin Public Radio and NPR for informative, nonpartisan information.
This kind of integrity, especially during an election year, is only possible when you support your source for election news. So give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
As the donor, you get to decide how much to give. The control is with you, and maybe $100 or $200 a month is the right amount for you.
Whatever amount works for you is the right amount to give. The key thing is that you do get involved. You join the thousands of people from Wisconsin and beyond who band together, pool their money, in effect, to keep their favorite radio station coming to them each and every day, over the air or over the internet. Make a decision. How much do you want to give? And then take a few minutes, just a few minutes of your time, and make your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you. Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, an 80-year-old festival celebrates the things that make Wisconsin special, but it's in California. Find out why a West Coast community celebrates the Badger State coming up. First, Keely Boltina joins me now for the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Member Drive. Our goal is to keep bringing you a wide variety of topics, from the top news of the day, new looks at our history, and fun stuff about the state we live in and beyond. Your support makes that happen because listener support is actually the largest source of funding for Wisconsin Public Radio programs. So give now. Any amount makes a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Just about 25 minutes left this hour, and we are looking for 12 more people to join in. And we also want to say thank you if you've already given.
If you haven't, give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Your gift will fund the programs that you enjoy.
Anne from Milwaukee says, I just discovered Central Time and love it. Thank you for being here. And you know that Anne means business because Anne put 2 exclamation points after each of those sentences.
Nice.
Anne, thank you so much for listening. Welcome to the Central Time family. If you agree with Anne, if you appreciate that Central Time is here, and even if you haven't just discovered it but have been listening to Central Time for a long time, if it's your go-to place for an informative and interesting afternoon, now's the time.
And it's your financial support that makes these conversations on Central Time possible. Listener support is the biggest piece of our funding here at Wisconsin Public Radio. Make your contribution right now online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Maybe giving $1 a day is the right amount for your Wisconsin Public Radio listening. When you think about it, a dollar a day is a pretty good value. I mean, it's less than a cup of coffee or a pop or even a day of cell phone service.
A dollar a day comes out to $30 a month, and you can set that up as a monthly transfer from your bank account or charge to your credit card. Make your gift now in the amount that's right for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
This drive, donate any amount and you could win a $1,000 gift card to Wheel and Sprocket. Buy a new bike, add a trailer for your kids or cargo, or get your hands on some of the latest cycling gear. No contribution is necessary. You can send in a postcard with your name, address, email, and phone number to WPR Bike Drawing, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. Better yet, you're automatically entered when you make a donation of any amount. Here's how.
Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 to make your donation. It's Central Time. Rob Ferret here with Keely Boltina. Your support during this fall membership drive makes the WPR programs you rely on possible. Your gift of $10 or $20 a month, whatever amount you choose, it is the right amount to give.
And, you know, the other thing, Rob, is that giving to WPR is so easy.
Super fast.
Really quick. All it takes is a few minutes of your time and a gift of any amount, say $10 a month.
That donation then comes back to you each and every day in form of great programs that you can listen to. Show your support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and give as generously as you can.
You love WPR because it's your source for intelligent radio. We get that, but there are costs associated with that quality, and that's where you come in. Your support is so important.
Making a gift is quick and easy. You'll be finished in no time at all. Your contribution in any amount, $10, $20 a month, whatever, it all makes WPR possible at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We've got 20 minutes left, and we are looking for just 9 more people to join in.
There.
We are. You make WPR possible with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Jordan in Portland, Oregon says, as a Wisconsin expat, I love being able to tune into Central Time online and get the scoop from home. And Slane in White Lake says, I'll be honest, I wait with bated breath for Food Fridays, but I listen to the rest of the week, too. Yeah, Food Friday, that's the good stuff. But you'll work through the other stuff to get there. Thank you both calling from near and far there with your gifts. Thank you so much. How about you? Now, you can give. You can join them with your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Having a beer, a brat, and a cheese platter on an afternoon in late September may not seem too out of the ordinary in the state of Wisconsin, but in Santa Rosa, California, it's a special occasion, one where people celebrate being from the Badger State. For decades, going back to the 1930s, transplanted Badgers have held an annual Wisconsin-themed picnic. The only known break has been World War II until this year and the global pandemic. Wayne Walski, originally from Milwaukee, is now living in Santa Rosa, California. He and his wife, Mary, co-organized the picnic. Wayne, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Well, give us the story, Wayne, of how you first started attending this picnic after you had moved out to California.
Yeah, I had a client at the time that found out I was from Wisconsin and asked me if I'd been to the picnic. This is in the late 80s, and I said no. His wife was a Menominee Indian, and anyway, they were picnic goers, been going for a number of years, and so he dragged me over there one September, and I got bit by the Wisconsin bug and been with the group, my wife and I, ever since.
Now, when you get together with people from Wisconsin there in California, do you feel that sense of community? You got this one important thing in common with everybody there?
Oh, yeah. You know, I think there's a little bit of homesickness in the group, missing in many ways their native state, and get talking. And, you know, there's always fish stories or rainy picnic stories or things like that. And then all of a sudden, that's kind of curious, I find myself and others talking with a Wisconsin accent and doing it for weeks afterwards.
I did. I remember one time stumping somebody in San Francisco when I was at a movie theater and asked where the bubbler was. Does this come out for you all out there?
That's a dead giveaway.
All right. What kind of things do you do at this picnic to celebrate Wisconsin?
Well, we, you know, about 25 years ago, California out here was boasting about how good their cheese was because they had friendly, happy cows because they never had any bad weather. So we decided we couldn't take that sitting down. So we organized a cheese tasting contest, which we've had for the last 20 years, blind cheese tasting of everybody that shows up to the picnic and deciding who's got the best cheese. So we've had everything in from cheddar, of course, to Baby Swiss, to Gouda, and we've had a lot of fun with it over more than 20 years. So Wisconsin versus California in a cheese tasting contest is a big kind of an attraction for us.
Does Wisconsin usually do at least pretty well in the contest?
Well, we never lose when it comes to cheddar because the folks out here, they don't age their cheddar. I guess they're kind of impatient to get it to market. So, but we, it's pretty much 50-50 because we try to move it around as different kinds of cheeses. And, you know, California does have some happy cows, apparently, but we're more than holding our own.
Talking to Wayne Walsky, originally from Milwaukee. Now he's in Santa Rosa, California. He co-organizes now this annual Wisconsin-themed picnic there. It's been going on for over 80 years now. Now, Wayne, I know it's a bummer this year because of the pandemic. You put it on hold this year. Are you finding other ways to stay in touch with the people you might have met up with at the picnic?
Well, we have a committee of people. It's not just my wife and I. We've got a group of about 12 people who are very active in supporting this thing. It takes a lot of time and effort to put it together. We have a raffle. We raffle off a lot of Wisconsin-type, what I call gewgaws, everything from Packer paraphernalia to Badger to UW-Milwaukee to, you know, coffee cups that look like dairy cows. And we package all that up and have a raffle. We have a polka band. We have the tasting. And then, of course, we tee off with the brats and corn and beer. So it's quite an undertaking. And fortunately, we have a real good support group we've had for, 25 years that makes this come together. We're pretty proud of how we get it done.
Now, we asked our listeners to weigh in on Facebook if they've been away from Wisconsin or are away from Wisconsin, what they miss most, what they need to recreate the magic. Dean wrote I've lived in Mexico for 10 years. I miss the bike trails, state parks, brats, and long summer days. Dean says, I don't miss winter. Well, you mentioned you get the brats down there. How about when people reminisce? They're in California. Do people miss winter? Do you?
No, but you have the appreciation for it. It's kind of like we're all combat veterans because Californians don't know anything about real weather. So we talk about it in some of the, you know, the younger people may not, their folks are from Wisconsin. The kids have never been in snow or sustained cold. So, you know, we kind of put on the attitude that we're tougher than you. And the snow is always deeper when it's years later, so, and some of the other stuff is deeper, too. But one of the things we really enjoy is we have this big map of Wisconsin, and when you come in, you get a name tag, you got to put your hometown on it, and then people gather around this map invariably and point to where they're from and have these tell lies or maybe even some factual things about where they're from and why they're better than Menominee's better than Eau Claire or whatever it may be. So that's a lot of fun. And, of course, we also congregate around the half barrel of beer.
Now, we had Tim write Belt's Ice Cream in Stevens Point, among other things, and Gary mentioned frozen custard. We mentioned cheese. You get some Wisconsin cheese there. Do you get some Wisconsin frozen dairy products down there sometimes?
Oh, yeah. We've got a gal named Becky Ennis who's a UW grad, and she gets this ice cream every year, which is made in Madison, and I believe it's
Is that the Babcock Hall?
University product.
Yep.
Babcock Hall, I think it's called. So, yeah, that's a real treat. That's also, that's dessert after the brats.
All right. Another one a listener mentioned was fresh cheese curds, warm. Do you have curds, fresh or deep fried?
No, we don't do the curds. I don't know. Curds are the sort of thing that must have come on after we left Wisconsin in the mid-70s. But what we do have is we encourage people to bring a side dish. So we get a lot of really exotic potato salads and other things that, you know, Grandma taught one of our picnic goers how to make years ago in Wisconsin, and that's always a real treat. We have about three lengths of picnic tables with all the side dishes.
I got to ask, do you know how this whole thing got started, what, 80-plus years ago?
I do not, and, you know, nobody's around from that time. We've got some folks who have been around since the early 70s, but why it got started, I couldn't tell you. My guess is that it was people getting homesick. And when I came out here to Sonoma County, there were a lot of people, relatively speaking, from Wisconsin. You know, this used to be a dairy county. Now we're primarily wine, but we had a lot in common here with Wisconsin in terms of dairy cattle, much of which has moved away, but I don't know the specific reason why, and I'm not even sure 1939 was the first year. That's the first year that the guest book has.
Now, you mentioned Wisconsin. People actually went there from Wisconsin. Their kids show up at this. Do you welcome people who want to check it out, even if they don't have a direct tie to your home state?
Oh, yeah. We advertise this thing as Wisconsin. I open to Wisconsinites and Wisconsin wannabes. And there are a lot of those there. You know, we get this, even though this is 49er territory, we get Packer fans out here that show up in are pretty impressed with what we do.
Yeah, do you ever get non-Packer fans or people who are fans of, I don't know, a rival team showing up?
Oh, yeah, we got a friend of mine that shows up. He's a Bear fan.
Uh-oh.
And, you know, we threaten him, put him in a cage and parade him around the picnic grounds. So, otherwise, yeah, we get people from other states because they don't have picnics. We're from Wisconsin, so we have a picnic. And that's what we're famous for.
Now, what do you miss yourself, Wayne, about being here in Wisconsin?
Well, primarily the Little Lakes. I get back every summer and enjoy the Little Lakes up north. You know, California's got a lot to offer, but that's one thing it doesn't have is Little Lakes like Wisconsin and Minnesota have. So I hope your listeners are cherishing those Little Lakes because that's what I miss the most.
Now, again, you had to give it a pass this year. Are you maybe planning, hopefully it's up and running next year, on, you know, an extra special one to make up for lost time?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I haven't put that together yet. We just sent out the postcard saying, see you next year. We'll think of something to pep it up. And we usually have a new wrinkle of some sort every year or two, so we'll try to do the same. The only thing that holds us back a little bit is we're in a public picnic area and we're limited to less than 200 people. I mean, 1 year we had 350 people show up here, and it was actually miserable for the committee people because we spent the whole day running around town trying to get more brats and beer.
It's an important mission, Wayne. Thanks so much for staying in contact with us here in Wisconsin.
On Wisconsin. Thanks for the call.
Wayne Walski is a Milwaukee native resident of Santa Rosa, California. Now he co-organizes an annual Wisconsin-themed picnic in Santa Rosa. It's been canceled this year for the first time in decades because of the pandemic. It originally started as far ago as 1939, maybe longer. That's as far back as records go. Now it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Member Drive. Keely Boltina joins me. Our goal in this drive is to make sure that you keep getting your favorite programs like Central Time.
And your gift of any amount is so important because your support provides the largest piece of the funding here at WPR. So give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We are knocking on the door of our goal for this hour. Just 10 minutes left or so to get 5 more contributions to hit that goal. And these hourly goals then make sure that we have the funding for the programs that you enjoy. So help us out. Make your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I mean, come on. In that last segment, we heard a celebration of Wisconsin all the way out in California. Cheese and brats and Packers gear and the classic bring a dish to share. I mean, everybody's welcome there. Those Wisconsinites and Wisconsin wannabes. These are the kinds of conversations that you can count on from Central Time.
Yeah, another great thing is I've been at this for a while. This is the first time I had heard of this event, this unique picnic in California. Celebrating Wisconsin? Pretty cool. And it's a way, it's one of the ways we keep in touch with the Wisconsin community within the borders of the state and for people who feel connected to the state after they move out or for one reason or another. You make these kind of conversations possible when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Well, and when you do... When you do that, ask for your pair of WPR pint cups. Want to talk about this incredible thank you gift. These steel clean canteen cups are perfect for showing off your WPR pride. Whether you're enjoying your favorite beverage outside or staying hydrated throughout the day, they have a really cool design and super, super useful. All of that starts with your gift of $20 a month or more. And you can do that at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
This drive, donate any amount and you could win a $1,000 gift card to Wheel and Sprocket. Buy a new bike, add a trailer for your kids or cargo, or get your hands on some of the latest cycling gear. No contribution is necessary. You can send in a postcard with your name, address, email, and phone number to WPR Bike Drawing, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. Better yet, you're automatically entered when you make a donation of any amount. Here's how.
You can do that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Make your donation in support of the programs you count on. It is Central Time. Rob Ferret here with Keely Boltina. Your support today of Wisconsin Public Radio keeps all the programs you enjoy going strong. Whether you give $10 a month or $100 a month, we really do appreciate and we really do count on your gift.
We're still looking for those 5 more people to step up in these last couple of minutes of the hour here on Central Time. Maybe you donated a few years ago and you feel like you've done your part. Well, it's your continued support that actually keeps WPR going.
If it's been a while since you gave, it's a perfect time now to renew at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and we'll be glad to have you back.
Well, listeners make the programs here on Wisconsin Public Radio worthwhile, and it's members, though, that make the programs possible.
You get all these great programs because members, people like you who donate, kick in the largest amount of funding for Wisconsin Public Radio programs. Become a member now. Help keep WPR on the air with your gift of $100 or maybe $10 a month. Any amount you choose, you can do it. At WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
3 more minutes for 5 more people to join us. That works out okay because it just takes a few minutes of your time to donate to WPR. We will meet this goal. WPR is listener powered. That's why it is now time for your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And while you're there supporting Wisconsin Public Radio, ask for your pair of WPR pint cups with coordinating geometric designs. Your love for WPR is going to be on full display with every last sip. They are yours when you give $20 a month or more. Ask for them at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And Joni in Mille Lacs says, thank you for the top-notch research and phenomenal guests. Joni, thank you so much for supporting Central Time and for supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. Maybe you're like Joni. Maybe you appreciate the research and the incredible guests here on the Ideas Network. Now is the time to show your support by joining in at 888-202-2552 or at WPR.org.
Gideon in Wanakee says, I listen every single day and realized it had been far too long since I gave. Thanks for getting back on board, Gideon. Ivan in Arena says, thank you for keeping the pressure on me. I just became a sustainer, and now I feel like celebrating. Well, fantastic. Celebrate away. Thank you so much for giving. How about you join them and make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And consider becoming a sustaining member here of Wisconsin Public Radio. That means that WPR can rely on your consistent support. You still get to decide how much you give, and you can change it at any point in time, but that sustaining membership gives us a really great foundation for producing the programs you love. And if you are a sustaining member, thank you. Make today the day you increase your support by $5 or $10 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You count on us for great conversations. We count on you to help make it all possible when you give. Make your very important gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and thank you.